Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today. I want to be a part of it. And Coffia wants to be part of it. New York.
That was so good.
Your podcast with a little bit of Brazilian coffee. Café.
Hello, Coffia friends. This is Kelly Stein again, straight from the heart of Brooklyn, New York, with this coffee goddess, Erica Livoni. Mm-hmm. Is it correct?
Yes. Yeah, Erica Livoni.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
You got it.
And I'm really excited to be here. I'm always following her in social media, and thanks very much for being here. Brazil is really excited to learn more from you.
Oh, I'm so excited for you to be here too. I can't wait to meet all of Brazil.
Let's do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
This episode was recorded in 2019, right before the SCA Expo. I took the opportunity of being in New York before the coffee show to meet Erica Livoni in person and talk, of course, about coffee. In this occasion, she was preparing a lecture called Consumer Desire, a Long Roast Degree. What do specialty coffee drinks actually want from us? She took her experience in the coffee industry for more than 10 years to share some findings about consumers' profile, especially the ones out of the specialty coffee bubble. SCA recorded her lecture and published it in their podcast. If you want statistics and detailed information, please don't miss this episode kindly provided by Specialty Coffee Association. I will share the link in our website. So if you're listening in your podcast app or Spotify, don't miss this link in our website. Also, it's important to mention that almost 1 year ago, she was working at Trade Coffee Co. But nowadays, she is really, really busy with other projects in New York. And the last message, but not least, I would like to remind you that you can learn from Brazilian coffee professionals with coffee tours in different regions here in Brazil. Coffee Trips, the company sister of this podcast, already have a special program designed for you, already have a special program for 2020 harvest. If you want to learn more, send an email to contato@coffeeatrips.com.br. Contato, CONTATO at coffeeatrips.com.br. Guys, let's hug coffee trees together. Well, now that we had our moment, let's get back to this episode, which will bring lots of insights for everyone who wants to communicate coffee properly in their businesses. So before anything, I think it's important people understand your coffee background.
Mm-hmm.
And you started as a barista, as a mm-hmm. journalist. People are kind of lost to see so much talent and knowledge about coffee. You were in coffee for
13 years.
Oh my goodness. So how did mm-hmm. you start? Behind the counter?
Yes. I started as a barista when I was in college. And I went to school for film and photography. I wanted to be a war photographer and a documentarian and tell people stories. And it's expensive to do that. So I started working as a barista to help pay my way through it because all of my supplies were expensive. And I just kind of fell in love with it, honestly. So I worked as a barista for 4 years in school. And then when I graduated, there was a recession in America. And it was like no one was getting jobs. People who graduated college weren't getting jobs. I had a bachelor's of fine art. So it was like, you know, there really wasn't a whole lot for me to do. I didn't have a network or connections, but I knew how to make coffee. So,
I see.
Yeah.
Every time that we have crisis, all the storytellers are fired.
Yeah.
I know. I felt it.
Oh, no. But yeah, so you know, like people that want to share the stories and create and make art and make media, they're hit first. So I stayed as a barista for 11 years total. And then within that, I did quality control for a roastery. I ran an events program for like coffee catering. I was a competitive barista. I competed in a number of competitions for 5 years.
And you have some titles, right? Don't be humble, please.
I do have some titles. I'm a Q Arabica grader. I got my Q in October of 2016. And then almost a year later to the day, I won Coffee Masters in New York in 2017.
So Coffee Masters is a little bit different from the Barista's Championship, right?
Yes. Yeah. It helps that I won it for me to be able to say I like it more. But But I do genuinely like it more because it's eight different disciplines, eight different things you have to be good at. There's cupping and brewing. You have to make an espresso blend. You have to create a signature drink. And what you do is when you're on stage, you have a number of these different disciplines that you have to work on and practice, and you're in constant communication with your judges. So it actually represents more or less what you do every day while working bar.
Or what you should do.
What you should do. Exactly. Yeah.
What people expect from you as coffee professional, right? Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the reasons why I did so well is because at that point I had been a barista for 11 years and I, you know, had gotten all these different jobs and positions, and I had actually left a job a month before I won, so I didn't have any practice space. I didn't have coffee to practice with, so I didn't practice.
Oh my goodness. So this is reality with baristas all over the place, mm-hmm. because the challenge in Brazil for most baristas is to practice for the competitions. Mm-hmm. It was at this time that you beat Aga.
Kidding, Aga! That was the weekend that I met her, and then yes, I think it's the closest Coffee Masters final in history. I beat her by 0.4 of a point, so less than half a point. So we pretty much tied, and then she took the London Coffee Masters title, which was the next Coffee Masters competition. So.
And then the world.
She wins it all, and she's got such a great spirit. And honestly, I think even before we found out that we were competing against each other in the finals, I was just like head over heels, just enamored. I think she's hilarious. She's so much fun to be around. I love being able to see her. I saw her in Belo, and I saw her in London a couple weeks ago. And just, I mean, she takes it all in stride. We joke and we laugh, and you know, she's got such a good sense of humor about it. And it's so refreshing to see someone who is not only the best at what we're all doing, but humble and kind and funny and smart.
Exactly.
Like, she's the real deal.
She invites for the conversation, right?
Yeah.
It's so, I loved her, all her presentations. Mm-hmm. Sending love to you, Aga.
Yeah,
thanks.
Much love to you. I was joking with her that I'm going to get a t-shirt with her face on it made for Boston. So I think I still have some time to make sure that happens.
And thanks, Aga, for changing the game.
Yeah.
It's more exciting, more fun. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
But coming back to New York, right? Mm-hmm. We're not in Europe. Right now you're working coffee trade co, right? It's kind of coffee subscription company.
Yep. So I work for Trade, and our website is drinktrade.com. And we represent 52 different roasters throughout the country. And there's a personalization matching quiz. So there's 6 questions that you answer, and we determine what your experience is in coffee, what types of coffees you like. And then all of the coffees are roasted to order. So once our customers place the order, the roasters then get that order, they roast it, and they ship it from their facility in their branding, in their packaging. And that's the gist of it. We have got 2 different subscriptions right now. We're gearing up for cold brew because cold coffee season is coming. And we recently launched a blog. It's a lot of, it's not necessarily like hard-hitting journalism, but it's very much for people who love coffee but don't necessarily work in the industry. So a lot of the essays that we're writing and the content we're creating is to elevate our customers' knowledge base without being patronizing or condescending or making them feel like they're missing out because they don't know, but very much like, hey, there's a ton of stuff to learn about coffee, and we can do this in a fun way.
We have lots of subscriptions companies like Trade, and you guys don't have like an address so people can go and have coffee and you tell this story. Mm-hmm. So you need to reach out in different ways, and internet's helping, but people didn't get yet that it's all about storytelling.
Mm-hmm. It really is. It's all about the people.
And invite them for a conversation and take basic stuff or basic knowledges and just questioning it.
Mm-hmm.
And I like what you're doing because it's really fun.
It is fun. The launch of the blog, it coincided with Women's History Month. And so without making a big deal about it, like every single one of our essays from every coffee professional was from a woman. We're just like trying to keep these stories in line that are the stories that aren't necessarily told. You know, the experiences of women and people of color and Black Americans and just people that, you know, in America you see there's a perception of the barista being, or the coffee professional being, a white guy with a beard, looking like a hipster.
Yeah. Tattoos and gender mustache.
Yeah, exactly.
I know, the same in Brazil.
Mm-hmm. But coffee is so much more than that. And I think, you know, you get to see it in Brazil as well with your work on farms and then with in cafes. And here in America, we don't have coffee farms. We don't get to see that side of the supply chain. So we're working pretty hard on opening the door for our customers in a way that is very inviting and engaging. And so for them to see what a green buyer does and what a roaster does, and then eventually, you know, bring them onto the other side of the supply chain, what the producers do, what the farmers do, I think is a really fun progression. And I'm working on a way to do it diligently and smart, and not just, here, look at this person that's growing something, but like actually telling the story.
And engage, right?
Yeah, engage.
And can you describe quickly, briefly, the company? It's 1 year old. How many people are signing?
So it's 1 year old. We have about 20 people on staff. I'm the director of coffee, and I'm, along with a few of our customer service representatives, we're the only people who come from coffee that work in the company. We've got, how many subscribers do we have right now? I think the last number was just under 7,000 subscribers.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you're seeing all over America.
All over America. Mm-hmm. And so for a year, we've been doing very, very well. I think they gave us a whole bunch of statistics at this like company dinner. And the only one that stuck with me, because it's so goofy, is that we've sold over 411 million individual coffee beans.
Okay.
Which is enough. It's enough to put from end to end a bridge from New York to Honolulu, Hawaii. Well, I can't remember.
That is the most important.
Right.
I
can't remember the things that's like, yeah, we've sold these many bags or these many dark roasts. I'm like, oh, a bridge from New York to Hawaii. The real important stuff.
You were preparing like a lecture to introduce in SCA.
Yes.
Describing how, according to the experience that you're having in this company, you have like a profile of what Americans are drinking today, what they're looking for. Can you share with us?
Yes. Yes. So this part of my favorite thing about working at Trade is I've had theories about what customers want for a long time. You know, 11 years serving people and interacting with them, you get anecdotal evidence and experiential evidence as to what trends are. But with Trade, it's, you know, we're tracking people's the answers for their quiz, where they live, what they're buying, and we can see it objectively, just as raw data. And so the lecture that I have at SCA is customer desire along roast degree. What do specialty coffee drinkers want from us? And what's completely not surprising to me at all is that customers want medium to dark roasted blends, and they want single origins that have flavor notes of caramel and nut and fruit. So
this is really, when someone from the specialty community will listen to this and, oh, because this is all what coffee geeks are fighting against, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And all of a sudden, who is paying the bill is saying, you know what? I don't care.
Yeah, it's what they want. And we are seeing about 35 to 40% of customers, if they come in and they make their first purchases for a medium or a dark roasted blend, that they level up into single origins, that they actually start along the specialty coffee path that all of us do. A lot of them, when they experience a natural for the first time, naturally processed coffee, they get so excited. They didn't know that coffee could taste like this. And I think about my own progression in coffee. I mean, none of us are born knowing what a 90 plus scoring coffee is or what it should taste like. And one of my aha moments was with a natural Ethiopian. And then the next aha moment was a Kenyan, where it was like, wow, I didn't know that coffee could taste like this. And so it's not all of our customers that do that, but about a third of our customers get to have those experiences. So the thing that I find most fascinating is it's not surprising at all to me that customers want medium to dark roasted blends, because those are words that they understand and are familiar. They know the word medium. They know what a blend is. They know that it tastes good with milk and sugar. They understand flavor notes like caramel and nut and chocolate and fruit. They don't understand what single origin means. We could have called it anything.
They don't understand what points are.
Nope.
85 points.
They don't know what that means.
Exactly.
They don't know what acidity means. They don't know brightness. they don't know what bloom, like when you're making a pour over.
Yeah.
So when it comes to the coffees that industry professionals love and cherish, there's a barrier for entry. There, you have to understand the vocabulary and why this makes it special. And one of the things that I've been really grappling with for a long time, and I still don't have an answer, is how do I talk about what a single origin is and change the vernacular? Like, do I say one country, one region?
One farm?
One lot?
And the like, same farm?
Yeah. And lot might even be too much for a general consumer to really wrap their head around.
Yeah.
So single origin itself has been this thing that's kind of like keeping me up at night, where I know what it means. If you break it apart, it's one place. It comes from one place. But we say it with such authority and we say it with such certainty that when I'm talking to like my parents, for instance, who, you know, they're my parents, they've known that I've been doing this for 13 years, I say single origin and they're still confused. So I could say one country. I could even just say Brazilian coffee, you know, instead of single origin. So it's interesting to see, because customers want something that tastes good. Everyone wants a coffee that tastes good and they don't want to feel stupid. So when we're using language that they don't understand, but they know that it's good, what we're talking about is good, there's a disconnect where they think that it's not good enough for them or they're not good enough for it. It creates this feeling inside of our customers where they feel inadequate and so they just don't buy specialty coffee for that reason.
Between us, actually, between me and you and the coffee listeners, I'm not really comfortable with the term origins.
Really?
Because it's like we are looking through the eyes of someone is colonizing the producing countries.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you use the same word for wines?
Oh, interesting.
No, we don't.
No, you don't.
So why should I? But nowadays, I'm using this word because working with a specialty, it's easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when you say single origin, for me, I would understand it's a specific lot in the farm.
Mm-hmm.
Because farms in Brazil, even the small ones, can be 5 hectares. And can be 2.5 one side of the hill, 2.5 other side. So completely different coffees.
Yeah.
So I know it's complicated even for us. Working with that, it's confusing. Imagine for the regular consumer.
Exactly. I mean, I think the regular American consumer doesn't even understand that coffee is the seed of a tropical cherry.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, and we have to figure out a way to educate everybody as to what that is without making them feel bad and, you know,
or stupid.
And specialty has the additional uphill battle of we don't have the marketing reach that commodity does, that Starbucks or Dunkin' Donuts do, because they just have that reach. And so I think the last numbers that I looked up, there's about 1,200 different specialty coffee roasters in America.
How many?
1,200.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, America's a country of 300 million people. So it's huge. And so 1,200 is a lot. It's definitely a lot. But there's no unified voice. There's 1,200 separate and distinct roasters. But there's also probably even more than that in Starbucks shops. You know, there's probably more than 1,200 Starbucks stores. And so they have a unified language, a larger reach. They can market better. And so one of the things that I've really been working on with trade, we've been growing rapidly. We have, I think, just under 30,000 followers on Instagram right now. And we're just creating language that makes sense for customers. Like, we developed these things called taste types. Instead of saying a challenging single origin that's got a lot of acidity and is tea-like, you know, you and I know what that will probably taste like. But for our customers, I've just reduced that right down to citrusy and tart.
Right.
So it's a way for customers to look at these words and pretty much know what to expect out of their coffee. It doesn't always work. We've gotten some feedback where people think that we're talking to them like they're children.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, because you can't please
it's a lot of them. Yeah.
You can't please everybody.
It's you're saying about ways to communicate, and I think that I'm not sure here in the US, but in Brazil we have lots of Nespresso capsules sommeliers. So they take all that language that the brand is trading, which is fine. Mm-hmm. It's the way they found to sell their product.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying bad stuff about it.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, and then we say, I want a lungo, and you go to a coffee shop, or I want a ristretto.
Mm-hmm.
It's completely different. So
yeah.
It's really complicated to communicate this this complex, mm-hmm. and we as storytellers, because in the end, you're a storyteller.
Yes.
Your degree is in communication and photography. Mm-hmm. So our challenge is to overcome this communication barrier. During Cup of Excellence, I was talking to some international buyers, and they say that Brazil doesn't need to prove that these producers can make great and unique coffees. Mm-hmm. The next challenge now is to communicate.
Yes. Everyone has a different expectation of communication, of what they're going to expect or what they think is good. So I think so much of what specialty gets hung up on are these, you know, 85, 88, 90 plus coffees and using those kinds of languages, because that creates an objective good. You know, something that you can look at and you got this point that means it is good in this way. But when you talk to customers, what is good for them is purely subjective. It is completely a personal preference and a choice. They don't care that something scored 90 points or above and they're being told that it's good. If it doesn't taste like the thing that they're familiar with and that they like and that they think is delicious, it's not good to them. And I've known this for so long because I can tell having served customers and talking to customers, but actually being in a position where I'm slightly removed from the day-to-day face-to-face interactions, it just shows up in all of the customer feedback, in the reviews and all of that. It's like, wow, we can know as an industry objectively that a coffee is good, but we need to communicate to our customers and remove that kind of language because they won't buy into it. They don't understand it. And they interpret it as us telling them that they are not good, that their choices are not good, which isn't true. It's not true at all.
They are paying their bills.
They're paying our bills.
Here comes the money. Here we go. Money talks. Here
comes the money. Talking about, you mentioned dark roast. Mm-hmm. There is a difference between dark roast and burn.
Yes.
Can you just...
Yep. So the way that we classify it at Trade, we've got four different levels of dark roast. A balanced and fruity, which is like a blend that's like pretty much a medium. Sweet and smooth, which is a true medium roast. Comforting and rich, which is dark but not oily. And then we have the burnt category, the roasty and smoky, which has been developed to second crack. All of the beans are expressing oil and there's very little taste and nuance of the green coffee anymore. It takes on that roasty flavor from the drum. And that is one of our like highest selling taste types, but it's not the most. The one that's actually that sells the most is true mediums.
So, huh.
Yeah. So, and I think again, because, you know, I buy medium sized t-shirts, whether I think they're going to fit me or not, like medium is the kind of one size fits all. So it's a place where customers feel comfortable buying. And when I talk about nuanced, developed dark roasts, I'm very much still talking about the nuances that a roaster can do with like pre-roast blending or post-roast blending, creating a blend that will taste good with more development, more sugar, because I'm tasting, I QC all of the coffees with a team of mine. So we taste and we can taste distinct differences between a chocolatey tasting dark roast versus something that has vanilla and notes of apricot or tobacco even. Like you can still taste these nuances from the green coffee even when it's developed further. And I've talked to a lot of roasters about this, and you know, it's split. People think they either don't believe me, and I keep trying to tell them like, I'm telling you, I've tasted it, like it's real. Or they've been focused so much on figuring out a way to make the nuances of the green coffee sing on like an underdeveloped or a light roast that they don't realize that they can also take that care and that knowledge and work and put that into a dark roast as well. It's really fascinating. And I think I like to challenge my roasters to start thinking about this in a new way, because climate change is real. Our coffees are leaving us. Half of the available land for growing coffee is projected to be gone by 2050. And in that same year, in 2050, global consumption is expected to double. So we have to start thinking about what the customers want now to make sure that there is a base for revenue and money and make sure that those coffees can exist, because I can tell you an 85 point coffee can taste really good in a blend and a darker development. So if we start giving that to customers now and show our producers and our farmers that this is something that they want, they can actually start cultivating those coffees for us, for the entire industry, and still have a revenue stream as their 88 points and their super high grown coffees start dying off.
In any company, you need to see and study your target and study their habits. So if your target of clients, they are consuming coffee with milk, darker roast makes sense. It's not because they are knowledgeable about coffee. It's just the way they like their coffee.
Yeah.
And when it all started, 1 year ago, you started and the company started. How, you were since the beginning?
No. So the company launched on April 5th. 2018, and I joined in middle of July.
So in July when you started, what were the things that made you surprised? Like, wow.
So when I first started, they didn't have anyone on staff tasting the coffees.
Oh.
So that was very interesting, but sort of. I mean, it's a tech company, so there's a lot of people from the tech world. And so I stepped in and I was like, I was looking at customer satisfaction and it was okay. You know, like half of the customers, about 50% to 60% liked the coffees that they got. So I recognized that creating a cupping program and hiring people to help me categorize these coffees and taste them would only increase customer satisfaction. And we're at, it vacillates between 8 and 9 out of 10 customers thumbs up. They love the coffee that
good.
We send them.
Yes.
Yeah, which is very high. And it's something that, you know, from the coffee world, having run quality control programs at roasteries, having been a green buyer, I know that you have to taste it in order to know what it tastes like. But for everyone else in the company, they thought that whatever the roaster said was
I see.
What the customer wants. And sometimes that is true and sometimes it's not. But again, communicating and finding a common language for our customers was the thing that I really spent my first 3 months doing.
And how can you evaluate the situation now or the future for subscriptions companies?
Well, I know for us, because there are a bunch of different subscription companies in America as well, and no one does it exactly the same, which is nice. I think the thing that customers want the most is variety. They want access to different roasters and different coffees. They want to try something new every time. We implemented a dark roast subscription, and we figured that it would be like, you know, the customer would find their coffee and then they would just want that and reorder it over and over again. And we couldn't be more wrong.
Like, wow.
We have to work on expanding the amount of coffees in this program, maybe bring a couple more roasters in because our customers are like, I already got this coffee. I want a different one now. So while I think that might be something that's difficult for individual roasteries for their subscriptions, but I think it's a slightly different customer. Like if I, you know, wanted to just get a subscription through Onyx, for instance. It's because I love Onyx and I just want their coffees all the time, but I'm going to want a different coffee every single time it comes. But on our platform, you know, someone can try Onyx and then they can try La Colombe and then they can try Stumptown and they can try, you know, they can like get the same type of coffee in that same taste type and just see what different roasters are doing with it.
Cool.
Yeah. So
yes.
I think there's going to be more variety there. We're putting some very diligent effort into categorizing what new roasters to bring on and why. I like to say that specialty coffee can be for everyone, so therefore there needs to be a specialty coffee for everyone. A lot of what we have on the platform right now are companies run by straight white men. So I'm looking at women run, you know, minority run, black run, people of color, indigenous people, like different types of coffee companies that all buy along the specialty supply chain. So that way, you know, a little girl from middle America can be like, oh, well, there's a all women run roastery here.
Why not?
Why not?
Yeah.
It's something to aspire to. Like visibility and representation is very real. It does a lot of good work. And, you know, I'm working as a, you know, cisgendered white woman. I'm trying to figure out a way to do this without tokenizing anybody, without just being like, oh yeah, diversity, we did it. But like,
it's like checklist. I'm doing C-Lite's marketing checklist right
now.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't ever want trade to be this thing where I'm putting up a, you know, person of color just for marketing points. You know, I want that story. I want everyone to understand where it comes from. So like, I don't move quickly when it comes to making decisions like this because I'm trying to see it from all angles and do it the right way that removes me and my visibility from their story.
With this experience, as a barista, you work behind the counter and now you're telling stories. Do you believe that tell stories properly in a simple language is worth it for the business? I'm talking about money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's worth the effort and the investment.
Yes, it is. And it's, I think something that specialty kind of loses sight on is that this is an industry. It's money, it's business, it's revenue. Coffee is one of the most traded goods on the entire planet, and we like to let our moral compass be our North Star and our ethics, but I see that being appropriated into marketing a lot. And it kind of has to be. You have to be able to tell these stories, but you have to do it in an ethical way. But I think it doesn't have to be so black and white that it's you're either making money or you're being ethical. I think there is a way to do it.
Of course, yes.
Yeah, and it's advantageous. Customers want those stories. People want to know who's making their coffee. And just like our discoveries and both of our trajectories in coffee, it's about the people. And so when you start snagging those customers and they start caring, they see their barista every day. They want to know a little bit more about the coffee as well, who it comes from, where it comes from. So yeah, I think it can be a money-making tool that people shouldn't be afraid of using, you know?
Yeah, the point is people are using the same tools or the same angle to tell a story. Mm-hmm. So it's boring. We were talking about fun ways to tell a story. And can you just mention some examples that you're using?
Yeah. So... This is kind of a fluff piece, but astrology is really big in America right now. So we did an astrology piece where we were talking about the different signs as what kinds of coffees they would be, because that would be nice and fun and fluffy.
I see.
We got a lot of good responses on that. We do, so we have the green buyers, actually... Specifically, Jamie Issetz from Merit Coffee is their green buyer, and I love their program. I love their coffee, and so I wanted to ask her, you know, can you tell us what being a green buyer is? And her essay is pretty much just like, it's the greatest job in the world. I get to travel. I get to meet people. I'm going to jungles. I'm tasting coffee. And it created, like, as I was reading it, it transported me on a trip with her. You know, in my mind, I went with her, and the Randy, who works for Trade, she's our content manager. I sent it over to her, and she came up to me afterwards, and she was like, that's fantastic. I didn't know it could be like that. I didn't realize that's what it was. And I was like, yep. When you let the person that actually does it tell the story, it can really go very far. It literally takes you there.
And telling stories can be really tricky, especially for those who are not professional in that, didn't study for that, because there is like a trap of ego trip. Mm. Like, my opinion is not the law. It doesn't mean it's the reality. So there is a difference between stating your opinion as a reality and describing what you saw.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
We can see lots of those examples running through the community, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what is your opinion about this?
I'm so tired of people using their own opinion as fact. I am so tired of pocket science. I'm so tired of people telling me that cold brew is terrible, that, you know, coffee with acidity is better. I'm so tired of it, because your opinion is your opinion. It's not fact. It's your experience, which is true. It's a true and valid experience. But the way that things get presented, the way people talk about science of coffee, and they're not scientists. They don't run lab tests. They don't know the scientific method, but they talk about their experience as if it's fact. And I hate that, because that's another barrier for our customers. They're like, oh, well, I guess I shouldn't like cold brew because it gets oxidized and it doesn't have acidity, so I guess it's bad. But every time I go buy a cold brew, I like it. Right? So this is like, I don't want to really paint anybody in a box, but I see men doing this so often. There are women that do it too, but, you know, it's very frustrating and infuriating, and it creates this barrier and this stereotype that coffee people are snobs, you know, that we think we're better than everybody because
we know coffee.
Yeah, sometimes it's just coffee. Most times it's not, but when it comes, honestly, anytime I hear a man tell me any quote unquote science that they've learned or gleaned, I roll my eyes and I just want to be like, it's just coffee, dude. Like, you're not curing
cancer.
Saving
the world. Like,
yeah.
Like, wow, congratulations.
Congratulations, you found out a new way to extract something. Tell me how that benefits anybody other than you. But
and you're talking about this kind of stereotypes. This is the huge problem of Brazilian coffee, because everybody saw that huge, the coffee giant, and they have already some conceptions about it.
Mm-hmm.
And when we are talking about almost a continent producing coffee, you can find any kind of realities.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why to tell the different realities, I decided to record podcasts in English to say, you know, guys, I'm sorry. And when you're stating those absolute truths, mm-hmm. you're affecting families.
Yeah. I grew up in coffee thinking that Brazilian coffee just tasted like peanuts.
Exactly.
That's what everyone told me for so long. And it wasn't until I started tasting different coffees on my own and stopped listening to just what people were telling me. I mean, I also think about the history lessons. I was taught that coffee houses originated in Vienna. You know, like, that's not true. They were in the Middle East for centuries before they ever showed up in Vienna. So you have to go and experience it yourself and taste these coffees and really see for yourself what tastes good and what doesn't. And when I worked at the Crop to Cup, which is an importer, we worked with, they still work with Yuki Minami in Minas.
And, yes, yep. Yuki.
Yes,
hi.
Yuki. Hi, Yuki. And her coffees and the coffees that she was exporting were fantastic. They were beautiful and nuanced and they didn't taste like peanuts, you know? Like it was these facts, quote unquote facts, and is mostly marketing. So people saying an entire continent's worth practically of coffee being produced in Brazil. It can't all taste like peanuts. It can't all be this one note thing. And I think those blanket stereotypes they're very dangerous. Like you said, it affects farmers' lives. It affects the people that work in this huge, huge country producing so much coffee that when you put up a barrier for saying, again, what is good and what is not good, you don't do the most correct work that you could to support your industry and those supply chains.
When was your... Do you remember the experience of having a good Brazilian coffee? Like, oh, this is Brazilian. Let mm-hmm. me pay attention. Was long ago or?
It was probably like 5 years ago. So
okay.
If I've been doing this for 13 years, about 5 years ago, I went to a cupping at the Pulley Collective, which is a co-roasting space in New York. And I forget which importer it was. It was an importer cupping. And we went through the table and it was all blind. And this one's my favorite. This one that tastes like blueberries, that's really sticky. You know, I love naturals. I've never not loved naturals. Everybody tells me, they're dirty or this or that. Shut up. They're great. I'm pointing to this one and they were like, it's from Brazil. And it, like, my mind kind of exploded.
What?
Really? My favorite coffee is a Brazilian on this table? Huh. And that from that moment, I started noticing, you know, when it was on filter coffee, when it was on espresso and just tasting it out. And that opened the door, and then really working with Yuki and seeing the different lots, the different processes, talking with her. And really, that was my first time that I was actually able to get a one-on-one, you know, experience with a Brazilian person, a Brazilian farmer.
I see.
And it was, I mean, just completely changed my perceptions of everything.
It's funny when you say, because my job is to tell stories, especially from Brazil, mm-hmm. coffee from Brazil. So I'm doing the podcast, some articles in international magazines. But the feeling that I have is even a parrot can talk. But when you live an experience, the whole message is different, the way you receive. Mm-hmm. It's what you are doing already with your customers, mm-hmm. interacting them when getting the feedbacks, mm-hmm. and they are having this experience with the coffee that you sent. Mm-hmm. And this cupping, this blind cupping you have, right? Mm-hmm. So do you think the next steps for the coffee community is to offer experiences that will really go inside the brain of the consumers?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Really, there's the first time I went to a coffee producing country, it was Guatemala. No, I'm sorry, it was Nicaragua. And actually seeing how coffee is picked and processed honestly like changed my worldview on coffee, because I had only read about it, I'd only seen videos, but actually being there taught me so much. And it was through Counterculture, it was this direct trade class where they were showing us what quote unquote direct trade really means. And so I was able to see, you know, a super small farm. It was like someone's backyard. And then I saw, you know, an eco farm. And I saw, I hate this word, but they used it, a plantation where it's, you know, a rich guy had this house and he showed us his horses and he was like,
yeah. I know.
Yeah. So I got to see a bunch of different experiences. And I really do think there is a difference between exploitation of being the white person on a farm pretending to pick coffee, or picking coffee and doing it badly and damaging the trees. That's exploitation. It's like white savior rhetoric versus a learning experience. Being there and watching and talking and learning.
And actually listening.
Yeah. Be there to listen, not to talk. Don't tell someone that, you know, if you add lactic acid or yeast to this tank that this will happen, blah, blah, blah. Why don't you just listen to what they're doing?
They're producing coffee for lots of years. So
yeah.
Maybe maybe something they are doing right.
Yeah, exactly. And then you might be able to learn something, a thing or two, if you just listen and gain the experience that way.
Thinking about experiences, I didn't record a special episode to explain everything about coffee trips.
Ooh.
I will for sure. But I would like to take the end of this interview just to introduce you guys. Erica will be like the New York branch of Coffee Trips Crafting Experience. What is that? It's like a company that I will launch. We are in soft opening right now. And I'm focusing in coffee experience in urban and rural areas. But it's not like, you know, these tourist guides like, this is Times Square, take pictures and blah. No. So we are going to learn about that specific place. And the point is we can make on demand according to your needs. So just quickly, briefly explaining what we're going to do is focus in experiences in general to coffee lovers, coffee geeks, or coffee professionals. Or we can also focus in business tourism. And Erica will help me, because I'm based in São Paulo, to build all these experiences here in New York. We were brainstorming. Can you just... guys, this is not a promise because it's on demand, everything, but ideas that we are having for New York, right?
Mm-hmm.
So for example, for the Brazilian producers, if you want to understand how the Brazilian coffee is introduced in coffee shops in New York, Erica, you help.
Yes. Yeah. There's a few cafes in New York that are exclusively Brazilian coffee shops. They use only Brazilian coffee. So taking people there so they can see what the American version of a Brazilian experience can be like. And then also, being in touch with participating cafes that have Brazilian coffees on their menus. So then people from Brazil can come and taste, you know, how Americans are making Brazilian coffee and tasting it on espresso and tasting it on filter and seeing this end of the supply chain and like how it is served to customers.
And we are mentioning Brazil because this is the country where I live. I'm Brazilian, but we can always prepare and personalize your experience. So if you're in Mexico, guys, if you're in Colombia, we can also do the same. No worries. And we can do like across coffee shops selling, I don't know, Colombian and Brazilian coffee, right?
Yeah.
And for the regular consumers, like someone who wants to be entertained, we can take like coffee shops that showed in movies or series.
Yeah. There's the beautiful part and daunting part of New York is just how much there is. And there's, you know, there's a trip for everybody. If someone wants a very specific Brazilian trip, we could do that. If there's, you know, people want the flashy movie side of New York, which is everywhere.
It's real. I really love it.
Yeah.
It's like we're taking coffee of another context, like the serious, and giving another experience, but at the same time talking about coffee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because you've spent a few days here now, and I guess I'm a little curious as to hear what your perception of American coffee or New York specific coffee shops are like.
I'm a little bit frustrated because I'm a slow tourist, so I like to take my time and I didn't see everything I would like to. But the point is, back in Brazil, we are watching all this social media. Mm-hmm. So we start building an image of, oh, these guys are perfect. I will never be in their level. But I'm going every little hole of coffee that they say we're selling coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And what I can see is a similar reality that we are facing in São Paulo City, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So you can taste awesome coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And very bad ones. Even with the fancy brand, you know?
Yeah.
Fancy coffee shop. So it's like, oh, they are humans like us. Okay.
Oh, I love that. Yep, we're just people here. Just people.
So, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Kelly. Thank you for having me on your podcast.
This episode is really special for me because I really love your work. I respect you as a professional, and now you will be my business partner.
Yes.
I'm so excited.
Yeah.
Coffee, 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 co